Welcome back, everybody, to the Gaming Careers Podcast, a weekly live stream covering all the news from the live streaming and content creation industry. On today's episode, we're going to be chatting about the recent Xbox and PlayStation purchases. A few people have been leaving YouTube and Twitch, some new announcements as to what platforms people are streaming on. And we've also got all of that new tech. There's been so much new tech released in January. Usually January's a month where almost nothing gets released because it's so far away from Black Friday and Christmas, but it seems that everybody's releasing products for streamers at the moment. So yeah, we're going to be covering that as well. I know a big announcement came out today and lots of videos have gone up about that. But before we get into any of that, we first need to speak to our co-host. So Ben, how are you doing, mate?
Hey man, I'm good. It's been a while. I think like 3 weeks since our last show. So excited to be back on a great day to have a podcast, honestly, with all the tech that came out earlier today, which I'm just absorbing as much as I can from these videos going out. But a lot of other news that came out too for platforms and purchases and stuff. So we've got a lot to talk about today. But I'm good, Ben. How you been lately?
Yeah, I've been good. It's been one of those weeks. I would like to say one of these weeks, but it's Monday, isn't it? So it's been one of those strings of 3 or 4 days that's just been stressful. And I know that content creation shouldn't really be too stressful of a job, but it has been. And we'll get on to talking a bit more about what's been going on when we talk about some of the products that have come out. But yeah, I'm generally pretty good. Loads of news because we haven't done a podcast for a couple of weeks, like you said. So we're catching up a bit with a couple of weeks of news. But even then, we've already been blessed by the gods of moving this podcast a little bit later and some news coming out as we are, you know, getting ready for the podcast. So it's always nice when that happens before the podcast rather than after the podcast. So Ben, where do you want to start?
So I figured we can start off as always with the DMCA stuff, which this is the DMCA show after all. Not too much to talk about this week. I feel like there was a lot to talk about last month and then it kind of fell off in terms of streamers getting banned and things like that and all the TV show drama. But Twitch did strike a deal with Universal Music Group, similar to how they did before with NMPA and Warner Music Group. So again, this is not to say you can use music from these companies, but They've made an agreement with this group in that same vein. So I guess they're going to keep doing this with other music publishers just to kind of get Twitch into the good graces with these places. But again, this is not the kind of solution DMCA that we're hoping for to see soon. So not too much to talk about here, but I think it's good to mention the podcast still all the same.
The most confusing of opening sentences, isn't it? Like Twitch must do this intentionally. I cannot believe that this is some accidental practice that they do. For those that are listening to the podcast, I'm going to read the opening to this email from Twitch. We're excited to share the news that we have entered into an agreement with Universal Music Group, UMG, that gives music fans on Twitch access to some of the world's most popular music artists by fostering the creation of channels for artists and labels and bringing exclusive music-based content on Twitch. That must be deliberate, in my eyes. It's not a great screenshot, yeah. Actually. It's a very skinny screenshot from an email, but
I think the title of the email was the same thing, though. Like, it was just, we come into agreement with Warner Music Group. And so you think right away, oh, I can use music now on Twitch, but read a little deeper, and that's not exactly what's happening here.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I don't know why they would ever want to deliberately bring confusion to the platform, because surely they don't enjoy dealing with all the DMCA strikes either. But yeah, this is pretty much the blanket exact same email that we got earlier in the year, but it was actually last year with the, was it Warner Music Group first time round? Yeah, I think it was. So yeah, not much change there, but I still saw people being confused and saying that they can, like, I saw somebody tweeting out a list of artists that are signed to UMG and being like, these are all safe to use on stream now. And I was like, have we taught you nothing? But yeah, this is the world we live in. So, not surprising from my side of things, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, it happens. We'll see if stuff keeps happening at DMCA. I know, again, there were all these bans with like the MasterChef stuff, and then it just kind of stopped, which I feel like is what happens with DMCA. It comes in waves, so I'm sure we'll get another wave at some point this year coming back with that. In other news, though, we had a couple of crazy acquisitions, including one that literally happened like 2 hours ago, I think, Pete, which, again, I'm glad we moved this podcast a bit later. But the first one, which I'm sure most everyone here has heard about by now, is the fact that Microsoft bought Activision Blizzard for like $70 billion or something, I believe, which I think is one of the, probably like the biggest deal in gaming history, I believe. I don't have a list of them, but I think that's probably going to be one of the biggest we've ever had. And just a crazy acquisition for Xbox on top of Bethesda and everything else that they already had kind of in the past year through their portfolio as well. So this is wild, Pete. Did you see this come out?
Yeah, and we've both admitted that we're not, you know, big console gamers, but you still, when you see deals like this go through, it's crazy, isn't it? I was trying to work out how big of a number it was in terms of looking at other businesses that have been acquired, and you know, how much it was for. And this, I mean, I guess it's good. Hopefully some of the big dogs in Activision and lose their jobs and under bigger scrutiny now, because I think there's been some dodgy things going on there for quite a while. But I mean, I'd like to say it's good for gamers, but maybe it's not. Maybe, you know, all coming under an umbrella company, it's not great.
Yeah, I mean, even if you're on PC though, the Game Pass stuff is so big that, I mean, I'm kind of wondering, do I get like WoW time by being on Game Pass now? And that kind of stuff. It's just a huge, huge buyout. So we'll see kind of what happens. I think it's like a 2-year process or something. So I think they don't fully take ownership till like a year and a half or so from now. But it's just a crazy buyout, especially Call of Duty, things in that franchise as well that have been on every platform in the past. But we also had, as of today, kind of as like a firing back, I kind of saw it as PlayStation announced that they're acquiring Bungie, just to kind of fight back here, which I would say is probably not the same level quite as Blizzard Activision, because it's really just Destiny, right, at this point that you're acquiring, but still a very big kind of news to come out here. And I kind of wonder if we're going to see more of these acquisitions come out from the consoles as they kind of battle for IP rights. I don't know, Pete, any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I'm not a big Halo gamer, so Bungie to me isn't, you know, it doesn't really tug at the heartstrings, so I haven't really seen from the community if people are happy about this or not. But I completely agree, this is 100% a move from PlayStation being like, oh yeah, Xbox is taking a couple of big game studios there, we should probably do the same. So yeah, I don't know what this is going to mean. Are we going to see games going exclusively under PlayStation and under Xbox? Are they going to stay open for crossplay and things like that? Yeah, it's. I mean,
yeah,
it kind of pales in comparison when you're talking about Activision and Blizzard, though, isn't it, Bungie? Because what other games do they have? I should have done my research, but I don't actually know.
It's really just Destiny, because they made Halo, but now that's owned by 343, which is part of Xbox. So obviously Bungie's a great studio because they created the original Halo, and Destiny is very loved. So they might have some stuff in the pipeline that's coming. I know there's a big Bungie group on PlayStation who played Destiny, so still big in that regard. But yeah, it's not quite, you're getting like one game versus the dozens that you got from Xbox. The deal wasn't the same value, of course. Like, Microsoft paid a lot more to get Activision Blizzard than PlayStation paid Bungie. But I mean, I kind of see this as maybe the first step of multiple things going down, because Xbox is putting a lot of pressure on this space now, and PlayStation has to kind of retaliate somehow. Otherwise, there's going to be no IPs left to grab. One thing I did want to say is that both, I think, PlayStation and Xbox announced that the titles Destiny and Call of Duty will be on all platforms still. So even though they've bought these companies, you know, Call of Duty is still going to be on every platform, just like Destiny is, which is good for players, but also makes you kind of wonder, like, what do they really get out of purchase at the end of the day? Like, is it going to be like first access on these consoles? I don't know. We'll kind of have to see what happens there.
Totally agree. I'm going to follow your lead on that, Ben, because it's just one of those things. I haven't really followed the console side of things, but there is a nice segue to do here, because this is about companies acquiring, you know, new members of staff and new teams. We're losing one of the greats, Ryan Fwiz. I'll change back to the screen share here, who is, I mean, I don't know really what his title is. Head of gaming is what I've always referred to him as, and I think that's just about right. But he's basically the person that's ran YouTube Live and YouTube Gaming, all the acquisitions that they've done, Dr. Lupo, Tim the Tapman, Ludwig. He's been the person behind those negotiations and sort of announcing them as well. And he even gives us, you know, the roadmaps going forward as to what we can expect from YouTube Live in the coming weeks and months and years. And he has decided to step down from his time at YouTube to go and join some NFT company. We're not going to get into the politics of that, but it is, I mean, I tweeted about this because it's such a stark comparison, isn't it, between someone like Fwiz and then if you look at CEO of Twitch, you know, you're talking about completely different personality types, somebody that's really involved in the gaming community. And actually, you know, you can see that from the tweets that he makes and the conversations that you have with people. And then it feels like the opposite. I'm completely blanking on the Twitch CEO, Emmett Shear. That's come back to me, thankfully. It's been a long day, guys. But yeah, I feel like they're polar opposites. And I think it's really sad to be losing Fwiz, especially as YouTube was starting to gain quite a lot of traction.
Yeah, I think this one was really big because we talked even on this podcast about how big a deal I personally thought that it was for YouTube to have pug faces that were out here talking about changes coming to the platform. He posted screenshots of like him and Susan in calls with creators, just asking what can we do better, things like that, which was really different from Twitch, where we had, you know, DJ Wee and too many people that were on there, but not like that person who was fighting to have new features brought to the platform. And even when DJ Wee was at Twitch, he was always criticizing stuff that they were doing. So it sucks to lose YouTube as kind of, or Fwiz is kind of the head force and face of YouTube. Hopefully they'll get someone else come in his place, but I don't know. That was sad to see after how much boom YouTube had last year with all the new people moving over and all the hype that was behind YouTube, and still kind of is, but it's going to be tough without him these days.
Have you seen any rumors of who might be replacing him?
I have not. I'm not sure if you have either. I know there's some other execs who also left YouTube, so it's not just him. A couple others that were kind of in the major exec rank.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that I really, you know, it shouldn't be this way, but so much is going to rely on who replaces them and, you know, how much money Google continues to put into the live space, because you don't want it to fall by the wayside like some of YouTube's projects have. Like, I'm trying to think of their version of Stories. It might actually be called Stories. It's not Reels. It's not the YouTube Shorts, but literally like community mm-hmm. posts, but they're like expiring after 24 hours. You can see how much care they put into that. That's literally died completely. So I hope that Live continues too. I would have thought so, especially as they put so much money into the acquisitions, but we just don't know. And hopefully somebody that cares about it as much as Fwiz did anyway. Keeping on the topic of YouTube, you've also got another tweet here of some other execs leaving. I don't know who Jamie Byrne, how do you say that? B-Y-R-N-E?
Byrne, I guess.
Byrne, probably, yeah. That must be an American surname. I've never seen that over here in the UK. And Heather Rivera have also departed. But some good news about YouTube. You talked about, or you put into the spreadsheet here that there's been a new feature for connecting with brands. You want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah, so this is something that they announced on the YouTube Insiders channel, that they're announcing media kits, which are basically just easy ways for you to pitch yourselves to brands by kind of giving you a template to use just right off the bat, without going to dig through all your metrics and things like that. So I haven't used this personally yet. I don't stream on YouTube, so I don't really have the reason to, but it's a cool way that if you want to go out and work with some certain brand that you're really passionate about, that you have this template you can send to people, and maybe people will be expecting sort of on the brand side of the standard of what you'd expect from a YouTube creator if you want to start working with them. So I just think it's a great way for people to kind of branch out beyond the typical avenues of monetization on YouTube, and hopefully encourage people to kind of pitch themselves more than just wait for brands, for ones they really care about, I would say, and want to kind of get their foot in the door with.
Yeah, YouTube I feel like they've kind of tried to do things like this before, where they're almost trying to be like the middleman between brands and YouTubers, and there's a lot of companies that exist in that space and take a little cut. So be interesting to see if this is a money-driven exercise for YouTube. Because it's kind of similar on Twitch, isn't it? They have the bounty program, is it called, something like that, where they try and basically link up partnered and affiliate streamers with games companies and brands that want to promote their new game.
Yep, exactly. And I think we actually have an update on the Twitch side of that coming up later this show. But it's definitely, I think, a play for the side of YouTube to try and help the monetization and just have some different ways to do that. But overall, I think it's cool, especially if you've never done that before and you just would have no idea how to start pitching yourself to brands. This is kind of an entry step to do that, to have something basic to show people. So again, I probably won't be using it, but if you are a YouTube creator or streamer, then that is available now, I believe, or rolling out to channels.
It's probably doing the standard, you know, rolling out to the US creators first and then trickling down the subscribers into the rest of the world. The next thing I've got brought up is literally hot off the press. Valkyrae has chosen to re-sign with YouTube, Ben. Were you surprised? Did you even know this was happening? I feel like a couple of months ago we might have covered in the podcast that she was tweeting that her contract was coming to an end. Maybe that was a power play to try and get more offers. Either way, another creator re-signing with YouTube. So that's a few of them now that have decided to stick on for another year. So they must be enjoying life over there. I don't know if we've necessarily seen these like higher production videos that everybody was talking about, you know, moving away from Twitch, the contract hours were less, so they're going to be able to spend more time creating higher production things. Have you seen any of the YouTube streamers doing that?
A little bit. I know Ludwig, one of the things he talked about when he moved was that he wanted to put on like the biggest Smash event ever. And that was the reason that he chose to go to YouTube over Twitch, because they were offering him more flexibility and that sounds like more money for that reason. And he has put on, I think as of this week, a Smash tournament. I don't know if that's the same one that he was talking about. That's going to be some huge in-person event. This was just online. But I've seen him do a little bit of it. Not sure about like Courage and Tim as much. I haven't really seen Tim do any sort of events besides the Cowboy stuff he's done kind of at the stadium. But I think he was doing it on Twitch too. So nothing too big there. I was not surprised to see Valkyrie go over to YouTube. I think she's kind of become, along with Courage and some of the others, like a poster child of YouTube streaming. And I don't imagine she'll go anywhere soon, especially with all these new creators also coming over now, like Ludwig and the rest of that gang. So it wasn't surprising. The video was very funny though. Pete, did you have a chance to watch through the announcement video, which every creator gets these days?
Yeah, I agree. I think this was one of the better written scripts of the, like, where am I going to be streaming? Because they kind of made a play on that joke, didn't they? Like, they talked about Tim the Tapman having the two different colored doors, and they talked about Ludwig's car color and all those kind of things. So if you haven't yet seen it, check out Valkyrie's Twitter, where she's obviously tweeted this video, making the jokes about all the different colors. And they out of Facebook gaming pretty hard in that, don't they?
Yes. I was going to say, like, you have to go watch it, but they made a nice dig on Facebook, which was kind of funny because the whole joke was like Twitch or YouTube the whole video, and then Facebook was not even considered. So I won't spoil it, but you'll laugh if you watch it and you prefer YouTube or Twitch, that's for sure.
Moving on from happy news of Valkyrie re-signing for YouTube, we got the sad news that DJ, we knew about this. I think he tweeted about a month ago that he was going to be leaving Twitch soon, but he actually officially had his last day as a Twitch employee. I think he's still streaming on Twitch, and he said that he, you know, always wants to be a creator on the platform. But for those of you that have been around the streaming community for a number of years, you'll know of DJ Wheat being an absolute OG and somebody that's been incredibly passionate about building Twitch in the right way and growing it and educating and all those kind of things. It is definitely sad. And the little clip that got shared here, I think, tugged at a few heartstrings for me anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I baked this in here too, because I know we talked about him leaving on a previous show, but the fact that he actually left this week, and then along with Fwiz also leaving YouTube at the same time, it's just interesting how the two kind of poster people of Twitch and YouTube both left. And I think it just must be a very hard role, because especially DJ Wheat kind of became the scapegoat for a lot of bad decisions that Twitch made, that he had to be the one to go on there and announce them and talk about them, and got a lot of backlash for how he would announce them. And it really was a Twitch decision anyway. So I just have a lot of respect for both of those guys for being the one to step up and announce those things when you're just open to criticism every time you do that. So we're going to miss them on the platforms for sure.
Couldn't have said it better myself, Ben. I'm just laying them up and you just keep knocking them down here. Next up, we've got a new feature for Twitch and probably the world's worst GIF quality, which we're getting quite used to now on Twitter. Experimenting with a new way of saying hello to communities on Twitch. Have you seen this in the wild, or you want to explain what the feature's like?
I haven't seen this yet myself. This is basically, for those who are listening, instead of, I guess along with, if you're a first-time chatter in a channel, it kind of says, introduce yourself, a nice little pop-up on Twitch that says you can tell people what you're about, that kind of thing. I haven't seen in a stream yet this little pop-up that says, like, first time. You get the first time chat from someone, but not the one who says welcome, etc. to the channel, which is what we see in this GIF. If anybody here has seen it in chat, I'd love to see that, but they're experimenting with it, so it may not be a full rollout yet at this point.
Yeah, so even as the broadcaster, you're going to be able to see this message of them being new. Is that right? It's not just that something that they see when they join the channel.
So there's two things. The first is that this introduce yourself, I think, shows to everyone, regardless of whether you're a viewer, moderator, or streamer. And it just says, as a like a headline, welcome X viewer to the channel, and then shows their message. There's also the first time viewer experience, which I think is rolled out to everybody. And that only shows to mods and streamers and just says, this is this streamer's first, or this viewer's first message here. So I think the combination is kind of interesting because they're a little redundant, but I think this one's more to kind of welcome, have your community welcoming this person versus just the mods and the streamer themselves.
Gotcha. Thanks for explaining that through to me. It's been a while since I've been a streamer on Twitch, so I always need your streaming expertise of what you guys see behind the curtain. What else have we got from Twitch? Oh, we had an open letter from the head of Trust and Safety. I can't pretend that I've read this. Ben, I'm presuming you've read it and done all the due diligence and sent me the meeting notes afterwards.
Yes, sent over the notes. I mean, this, I just added on here. I don't think it's a huge thing to talk about, but they did email it out to, I think, everybody who was on the email list. So they clearly want to kind of promote this with everything that happened in 2021 with hate raids and DMCA stuff and all that. So basically just kind of saying what they're going to do in 2022 or what they've already done in the past year to help safety and reporting and appeals and all that good stuff. So a couple of things they mentioned specifically are they're going to be updating the sexual content policy. They're going to update suspicious user detection, which is a new thing that they added a couple weeks back to kind of monitor like bot accounts and things like that. And also update the Safety Advisory Council, which I get confused on Twitch's councils sometimes. And to be honest, I can't remember which one this is. But sounds like they want to kind of make things more clear for people or change some of the rules in 2022. So we'll kind of see what that looks like when it rolls out later this year.
When things like this get emailed out, I often think, how many people click through and read this? Like, is this just literally what they, you know, they write and then they can prove that they've done some work in the Trust and Safety team? Or are people really interested by it? Maybe it's just me not being a marginalized creator in any way and not caring enough about these things when I clearly should. But for me, actions just speak so much louder than words. They can talk all about what they're hoping to do to tackle hate raids and harassment and things like that, but you still see far too much of it on the Twitch platform. So they need to prove that these actions are actually being taken rather than just say that, you know, that's their plan moving forward.
Yep, completely agree. I think it's mostly a PR thing. So hopefully we'll see some actual changes coming out later this year. There were a bunch of other changes to Twitch. They really had a lot over the last couple of weeks here that we can quickly go through. One is that we saw kind of a breakdown of local sub pricing and how that affected revenue from people since about August this past year when they started, you know, changing the price of a sub per country. And overall, it seems like the Twitch revenue for most users has gone down quite a bit, at least for this user in particular. So I'd be curious to see for all users how their sub revenue has changed since this. And Twitch added like a feeder program to help kind of supplement some of that revenue. But it seems like even with that, there's been a lot of dip for this broy, this streamer. So you guys might be seeing the same thing if you're on Twitch as well with that new change.
Yeah, it doesn't actually say in his bio where he's from. So it'd be interesting to know. He's got the price in dollars there. So maybe he's an American streamer. But I think different streamers from different parts of the world have been affected differently, and really we're not going to be able to get the data by crowdsourcing it. We'd have to rely on someone like Twitch sharing that, and there, unless they get hacked again, I don't think they're going to be sharing any data of how much people are earning anytime soon. But it's always interesting. I love when people like take the time to, you know, work out what's happened to them and draw up a graph to show the impact of a feature change and how much it can have on you. But yeah, like you said, we've got a lot of Twitch features to get through, so let's keep whistling through them. Next up, we've got the ads incentive program, which is starting to roll out, I think, to partners and affiliates. You want to talk about this, Ben? Have you seen this? Have you got this rolled out for you?
This one's really weird because they announced this feature in a blog post and then they deleted the blog post, but it seems like it's still rolling out. So I don't know if they had some backlash or something, but it's really weird because we only have this from Zach right now. Basically, this is a program that you would commit to streaming a certain number of hours a month and then running a certain number of ads per that time streaming, and then be guaranteed a set payout for running those ads. So they have, in the example, they have like $500 as an incentive for running 2 minutes of ads per hour and streaming 40 hours in the month. And it may not be that exact number when it rolls out, but I think kind of like Bounty Board, like you said, the idea is to give you like a specific goal you can complete and then get a guaranteed payout at the end of that. So we'll see if it rolls out. Again, very weird that they deleted the blog post about it right after they announced it. And maybe they send it back in the oven and it's not done yet. But interesting feature from Twitch here.
So yeah, that is interesting. Did they tweet about it or did they just make a blog post?
They announced it and put out a blog post. And I had the link in our show notes for the blog post. Went to check it today and the page was gone. So they've actually, I don't know why they removed it. There's been no info on why that is. And this is rolling out like slowly. So I don't know anyone who actually has it yet. If you guys have it in chat or in the stream, I'd love to hear about that because it's just really hard to find information on this at all right now with it being privated and everything.
I think I like the idea overall. We all know how much Twitch streamers like having goals and progress being tracked. You know, the achievements of reaching affiliate and partner. So many people love buying into being able to track their progress in that way. And obviously, like guaranteed money is always a good thing for streamers. So as long as it's not going to ruin the viewer experience, I actually think I quite like this. So I'm surprised that they would have removed the blog post maybe because of backlash, but people love hating on Twitch, so they'll find any reason to. But maybe I haven't really considered, you know, all the impact that that would have for streamers and creators. We've also got next up another feature that has disappeared from Twitch's servers, and that is not quite yet. Actually, you've got another 2 days to use it, but chance. This didn't last long at all. I feel like we reported on this arriving in December. Maybe it was only a trial feature, but for those of you listening, chance was a way to be able to rally Twitch chat to all spam the same thing effectively. I think it was it mods and the broadcaster that could set up a chant, and then and then all viewers could basically click a button to chant the exact same thing. It didn't last more than 2 months. What are your feelings as to why that is, Ben?
Well, I think it's in the tweet below there. So really interesting is that they actually saw people stopped watching when people started using chants, which, to be clear, if you've never seen it, it basically just looks like the chat is spamming the whole message, like the same message every time, which I thought was kind of fun. And that's a big part of Twitch culture, but apparently it was turning people off of watching Twitch. So that's why they cut that, which I understand. Like if people are hemorrhaging off the platform and they see that feature, then you probably don't want that feature on the platform to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, it's not surprising that maybe it was abused in hateful ways, but you would have thought that Twitch would have thought that about that before even testing the feature.
But mods control it, so I feel like it can't really be hateful unless you have some mod that shouldn't be a mod in the channel.
Rogue mods.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, that is a strange one. Moving on, I think, have we just already covered this, or is this seeing the other side of it? Experimenting with a new way to say hello to communities on Twitch. I'm having to refer to Ben an awful lot today because I've had the busiest few days in a row, and Ben has sorted this out with all of the podcast notes. So I'm seeing a lot of this stuff for the first time. So yeah, Ben, explain it to us.
You'll get to cover all that stuff, I think, in a second here once we dive into the tech in just a moment. But this we've already seen, but there is also, I have linked here, finally the animated and the follower emotes are now available to everybody on the platform, whether you're a partner or an affiliate. Which are really cool, especially the animated emotes. I was personally waiting on those for a long time, and I finally have them this week to use. So now you can add those if you are on Twitch and hadn't already had access to those in the past.
Interesting. So I've had this down as a video idea for quite a while about how to, you know, do some basic animation for emotes, but I've wanted to wait until it's rolled out to all affiliates. So is that what you're saying? It's now fully rolled out site-wide mm-hmm. to all affiliates and partners?
Yep. And a couple of things about that might be helpful. First of all, the animated emotes, they have like some pre-built animation stuff in Twitch. So you don't necessarily need to have a GIF to go turn this on right now. If you just take one of your existing emotes and just, you can make it like spin or roll and do things like that just to get it on. And follower emotes are only usable in your own channel, which I just learned today. So you can add those, but they're really just people who are coming in the first time and they can't use them in other channels. So obviously, it's just kind of as a nice add-on for people that are already in your community.
I see. And I've now seen that you've also linked the official Twitch support retweet saying that it's here for follower emotes, are here for partners and affiliates as well. Lots of emote updates basically for streamers on Twitch. You get follower emotes and animated emotes now. So I'll prioritize making that video. I probably need to brush up on my GIF making skills myself, but... we'll find a way to make sure that comes in. I think that's it for news before we talk about the headline of this stream, which is all the new tech that's come out. Is that right, Ben? Anything else to cover before we jump into that?
Yeah, I think that's most of it. We condensed a lot of it. The tech is a huge one because, like you said, we haven't had a really big release of tech since, I think, the Elgato stuff last year, like the Wave XLR and that kind of Stream Deck 2 wave. So I'm really excited, Pete. I know you've been working like crazy with everything coming out lately. So do you want to kind of dive into, where do you want to start here, I guess I should ask?
Well, let's start with the Stream Deck pedal. I actually haven't made any content on this because frustratingly it came out whilst I was away from home. So I got sent one, but then I couldn't really record any content of it. But I am using it right now. So if I go to show myself, I've just basically got it set up in the most basic way of being able to switch between three different scenes. So seeing Ben, seeing me, and then our screen share in between. So just swapping scenes. But I'm really enjoying it. This is the first time that I've used it, and it just makes, I guess, three tasks very, very simple. So if you're doing any kind of repetitive task on stream that you need to do often, it's really nice. The product itself feels really high quality. It's kind of what you'd expect from Elgato, very refined. A lot of people will say overpriced, but then actually when you look at the competition, it's so poorly made, and they've put a lot of work into thinking about the different levels and the weighting of the buttons, and obviously the integration to the Stream Deck software is a huge thing, because the amount of plugins and things that you can do there, Ben. I know that you've recently got yourself a Stream Deck sort of in the last 6 months, but you can really do anything that you can do on a Stream Deck now with a foot pedal. I might save some of my thoughts for a video if I do end up doing one, but I would like to see some more advanced functionality of like being able to push and hold buttons and have a different feature happen, or push two down simultaneously and that to do something different. But this is just the first iteration, and all those updates can be done via software. So I'm at the point now where I'm never surprised when Elgato releases a product that I was like, oh God, I really didn't think that they were going to do that, because they're so good at thinking outside of the box. I think they're one of the thought leaders in this space, and coming up with products that you don't even really know are going to be that useful until you get to try it. And I'm very lucky that I do get to try out a lot of these products. But Ben, I'm hoping you're coming with the opposite point of view, the skeptic, and then I can sell the reasons why I am enjoying it so much. And it's not because I'm so tired that I can't possibly lift my hands and I just want to use my feet for the whole broadcast. It's actually because it's really nice for running a stream like this and just being able to swap between the three scenes that we most commonly use.
Yeah, so for context, I actually do use a pedal with my stream. It's one of those... there really aren't many to choose from right now on Amazon, which is why I think why Elgato did this kind of. But it's been really nice to have push to talk for your mic, especially on a two PC setup, just to have that flexibility. This one looks really nice. Someone who gets a lot of use out of my pedal as is. It's much bigger, much sturdier to your point, and also much more expensive, which is sometimes a theme people say with Elgato. So I'm kind of curious, do you think it's worth the price tag? I know you haven't gotten a video on it or anything yet, but for $90, which is what it retails for, you think that's pretty fair given the quality and everything you've gotten out of it so far?
It's classic Elgato, where it's expensive, without a doubt, but it's built really well. But you kind of need to already be in the ecosystem for it to be worth it. I wouldn't buy this when you don't own a Stream Deck, because you're only getting three buttons. And even a standard Stream Deck, you get, I'm doing my maths here live on air, 15 buttons. And then they can have folders and folders and folders. You can have unlimited actions, basically. I think this is really useful for streamers that are already bought into the Elgato ecosystem and just want, you know, their most common three actions from their Stream Deck to be able to be accessed from using their feet. Obviously, it's not going to be a game changer. You're never going to get people watching your stream more because you're using a foot pedal. But it is a nice convenience. I'm telling you right now, as I'm using it, it's really satisfying to click. And like I said, for the most common actions that you're using, it makes things very easy. But yeah, it's just a nice to have, isn't it? It's a classic Elgato nice to have. What is good about Elgato coming up with products like this is we'll undoubtedly see some knockoffs arriving on Amazon in the next 6 months. So it's kind of good when they start making products, and then you're going to start to see the knockoffs arrive. So there's an undercut. There'll be a YouTube video of somebody making it for £5 or $5, you know, using two pieces of 2x4 and some springs. There's a lot of content that will arrive because people are now all of a sudden thinking about using a foot pedal for a stream. And undoubtedly, there'll be some Elgato fanboys that are, you know, ordering six and then never using their hands apart from playing video games.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, this was kind of a game changer for me, just a pedal, not this one. If you are someone who's really competitive with gaming and you can't take your hand off of your keyboard and mouse to like push to mute or unmute, that kind of thing. So I think you're that kind of person, it could be pretty big if you've never had that experience before. And I was thinking about getting this, but then I saw the videos come out today of the Beacon Mix, which kind of has similar features for the mic. I know you've spent a lot of time on that stuff recently, Pete. Do you want to jump into the Beacon stuff that came out today?
Yeah. So, I mean, to explain the the series of days that I've had, being based in the UK, sometimes it's hard for me to get products. A lot of these brands will want to send products for review or literally just so I can get some hands-on time. And I've been speaking with the team at Beacon for probably over 6 months, basically since a lot of them left TC Helicon. So I've known about these products, and there's been one sent over to me a long time ago, but it didn't happen to arrive here. And I don't know if that's Brexit to blame or what the reasoning is, but it didn't arrive until really late last week. So I basically had like a crazy 72 hours trying to get this video out today when they actually went live. And then everything in the world just decided to go wrong. Like Adobe just crashing like nonstop. It was just one of those days. So yeah, I'm very much looking forward to getting into bed tonight and having a good 12-hour sleep because I barely slept the last 3 nights. But to talk about the Beacon products, yeah, they've released 3 new products. I've just released a video about it. So if you're watching this live stream before you've seen the video, then definitely after we finish, go and check out the review video. It's like 20 minutes long because I covered all 3 products in one video, but there are 3 different products. They have the Beacon mic, which is what I'm speaking into right now. And then basically 2 versions of something called the Beacon Mix. So Beacon Mix and Beacon Mix Create, which are, well, the Beacon Mix effectively is like a volume controller for all the different apps on your computer. Like that makes it sound a little bit basic, but essentially that is what it is. It makes it really, really easy to control volumes of microphones, headphones, all the different apps that you use and group them together and mute them just with a touch. And then Beacon Mix Create adds on top of that, like all the features that you really desire from high-end audio equipment now as a streamer. So submixes, having different volumes for yourself and your audience, being able to route audio in really specific ways to different programs or to a second PC, as well as being able to, you know, control all the different volumes for all the different inputs and outputs and software that you use. So yeah, there's 3 products here. I won't spoil my video, but like the final thoughts right at the end, that like 2 minutes, I think sums up basically exactly how I feel. Like they're really exciting products. I think they have to improve in some ways. Like the hardware just needs to be refined ever so slightly. And I think the software has a long way to go, but really, really excited to be seeing and testing these products. Ben, first question, have you watched my video? You know, as an avid Gaming Career subscriber, I'm presuming you have notifications on and you went straight to the video.
No, I did watch it. Actually, I watched every video I could watch because I knew we'd be talking about this today and it all came out like 4 hours ago. So I had to try and learn something about it before we talked about it. It was really cool to see kind of all, everyone come out with their videos at the same time and the different perspectives of the same 3 products. I'm curious what you kind of find the most exciting of these 3, Pete. Like if you had to pick one that you think you're most excited for, or you had to give one of these like best innovation or best new piece of gear, which one would you pick?
That's a tough one. I said like at the end of my video that I don't really understand Beacon Mix, the cheaper of the two, the $150 one, because for $50 more, you get Beacon Mix Create, which is just so much better. And I don't think there's really that big of a market for $150 volume controller, essentially. I know it's really nice and has a screen and all those kind of things, but I would just definitely save up and spend the $50 more to get all of the submixing and routing and things that you actually need as a content creator. So for me, Beacon Mix Create and the Beacon Mic are the 2 most interesting. But like I said, I think they've still got improvements to make. Hopefully most of them can be made, you know, through software changes. But it's just good to see companies thinking outside of the box, you know, kind of similar to Elgato. And there's a lot of crossover with these products. Like when you go through the tutorial or when you go through my video, and we look at like the software side of things, there is a lot of crossover. They've clearly heavily been inspired by Wavelink and how Wavelink operates. Like the programs look quite similar next to each other when you're talking about, you know, two different sliders for each channel and being able to control the volumes independently and adding channels and rearranging it. All of these programs kind of look similar now. Wavelink, Rode Connect, Beacon, even Go XLR to some extent looks similar. So it's good to see that these innovations are all pushing all of the companies in the right direction, which is more features for us. Sorry, I just missed that comment. Wow, looks cool. It's amazing how much more accessible streaming has become and far more intuitive for new streamers. I think that's the biggest thing is, like, you'd expect a company like Beacon, who came from GoXLR, to, you know, be really heavily invested in the XLR audio route. So for them to build a USB-C microphone with so many features actually built into the microphone that takes away from the processing of your PC, I think it's really exciting. But I haven't watched any other videos on it. I've literally been bashing my head trying to get my video out. And so that's something that I'll do tomorrow, is watch all the other content creators and get their angles. Because it's always interesting when you have all of the embargoed videos going out at the same time. I never know what that's like as a viewer, like if that's actually annoying or if it's good, because probably everybody watching this channel is also subscribed to a lot of the other channels that talk about streaming tech. And when they see 10 videos from this company that they've never heard of before, I could see why that might be annoying, because it's filling up your YouTube sub feed. But at the same time, I've always liked when creators do that, because you get so many different opinions. You're literally being able to watch 5 or 6 different people review a product, and they'll all have their own slight spin on what they think of it.
Yeah, I think it's really cool as well. And there's so much hype that comes out, which I think is probably why, you know, everything releases at the same time, to just be this explosion of excitement from people. And it does look like some pretty cool stuff. I think the one I'm personally most excited about is the Beacon Mix Create, if I had to pick one of them. Still need to do some research on them. And it seems like there could be some more work on pieces of, like, the software and things like that, as a consensus I've heard so far. But I just want to say it's really good to have a competitor kind of in this space, especially with Elgato just being kind of the king of stream gear right now. And there's stuff from Logitech and some of these other companies, but no one really goes after the streamer market quite like Elgato. And I feel like all three of these products are really targeted mostly for streamers, right? There's some overlap with audio and just general production, but I think it's cool to see another space that's really pushing into the streamer market. And if we have more competition and more new features coming out, then I hope we get some really cool new stuff coming out for the next couple of years as well. Because this is kind of like the first new product I've seen in a long time, especially the Mix and the Create. Like, those are pretty innovative, I'd say, in the space. And I'd love to see more of that coming out from either Beacon or Elgato or whoever else in the next couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole reason why these things are great for us consumers, is companies coming out, pushing in the right direction and pushing each other. Like, there's no chance that Elgato didn't watch the launch today and be like, God, they've copied this, or, you know, we should have thought about that. We should implement that in our next device. Like, Elgato are definitely thinking about Stream Decks that have LCD screens. If they weren't already, they probably are now, with dials and things like that. So yeah, it's a really exciting time to be a streamer and a creator, because more of these products are going to be coming out and they'll be driving the prices down versus each other. And it's just quite exciting because this is like their first product launch, and they've had a really good launch with three quite compelling products that I think will be popular. But yeah, it's worth checking out my review if you haven't already. I know that people are going to say that, like, it's all sponsored and things like that, but genuinely isn't. Got sent the products for review, but I've been talking back and forth with the team there about features that I think are right for content creators and streamers throughout. So, and if you watch my review, you'll see some of the negative things that I said about it as well. I'm trying to keep up with chat, but there's a lot of opinions. Some people are saying that your short SM7B is absolutely killing the Beacon mic, which doesn't surprise me at all, because I've set this up in about 5 minutes without really being able to go through and configure it. But I also think that maybe that's not a fair comparison. Like, the Shure SM7B is really the pinnacle and of what a lot of streamers think of when it comes to stream audio. But I guess it's a fair comparison, because that's the kind of market that they're chasing, isn't it? They're trying to get people off GoXLR, off XLR microphones and onto USB.
Yeah, I mean, so a couple things. First of all, again, not quite a comparison, because I'm processing mine through a mixer and there's a lot more than just the mic, right? Versus, I think the Beacon mic is a lot of onboard processing, right? Like, it's kind of built right into it when you get it. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, Hugo. That's one piece of it. But I'm curious, like, so you're using the Beacon mic today, and you've used the SM7B prior to this on all the podcasts. Do you, as someone who's tested the new mic, do you see yourself replacing the 7B with the Beacon, just because of the software or the simplicity or the RGB or anything else?
Yeah, you got me. It's the RGB. It's always the RGB. No, I mean, one thing that I've talked about with you for a while is I want to be using this podcast to test a lot of the equipment that I get sent. So, you know, the last two videos that I've done, and we'll get on to talking about the other video as well, have both been microphones, and I want to use the podcast as a way to sort of get more time with the products and actually let people have a longer than 10 minute, which is all cut together, video of me testing the product, so they can come and listen to a certain episode if they want to check out if a microphone's for them. So I want to be varying the microphone that I use on this podcast anyway. I would absolutely never replace the SM7B. Like, for me, that has been my favorite microphone for a long time. And I know it's kind of held on a pedestal in the streaming world, and I've made content about that as well. But I just love the way that microphone sounds, particularly for my voice. But I'm definitely going to give the Beacon mic a good go and, you know, play around with the settings a little bit more once I've got more than like 2 days to actually try and set it up and make it sound okay for my voice. But yeah, there's a good point put out here by Tim, who said the most positive thing about these products is someone seems to have really thought it through, not like AVMedia's try with Nexus. I mean, I never got to actually try that product. I'd love to have tried it, because I know that they've made some software updates since. But yeah, that was certainly one that didn't have the greatest reception when it was launched, I think, last year. And I think, well, I haven't watched any of the other coverage from YouTubers on the Beacon product launches, but I think probably this one has gone a little bit smoother. There's also a message at the top of the Beacon website about something being out of stock already, so maybe they've had a bit of a fire sale to start. But yeah, keep them coming, Ben. Any other questions that you have about the gear?
I mean, my biggest one is, again, so there was one question also the same that you got about, are you going to replace your SM7B with the mic? Personally, I'm probably not going to, because I have this mic, right? But I think if you're like, you're in that niche where you want to get a decent microphone, maybe you prefer the simplicity of USB and you want to get like a solid sounding mic, the Beacon does sound good, especially for a USB mic. I think it sounds very good. And if you take away the comparison factor, like, yes, right now you might hear me talk and then hear Pete talk and there's some difference. But if you're just listening to Pete talk this whole time, I don't think you notice as much of like a lack of sound. So I think that's one really important thing to keep into consideration. And it's just way less to deal with than a Shure SM7B. There's no cloud lifter, there's no mixer, there's no XLR cables, stuff like that. So I think that's one way you could get on Beacon mic side for this kind of debate too.
Yeah, I think also it's a good video idea, to be honest. You know, the Shure SM7B versus this, and see how similar I can get them sounding. You know, playing around with the EQ a little bit more, all those kind of things. I think people are going to be interested in, and rightfully so. And I'll definitely listen back to this podcast tomorrow, probably whilst out on a run, and maybe cringe at some of the ways that I've set it up because it doesn't suit my voice in certain methods. But it's always good to get more time with the products, and that's exactly what I want to do with the podcast. But there was another microphone review that I completely forgot to share on all social medias. I made the video and then I had to go into London for a day and I scheduled it, and then I just completely forgot that this video went live, so I didn't push it out on Twitter or Instagram or in the Discord or anything like that. That is the GoXLR mic, which actually technically didn't come out in January. It came out towards the end of last year. But I haven't seen anybody else making content about this, so I don't know if I was one of the few creators that actually got sent one, or maybe I was the chosen one. They thought that I was going to big it up the most. But this was a really surprising mic. Did you watch this video, Ben, before I talk a little bit more about it?
Yeah, so again, you're the only one I saw put a video out on this, and I was really surprised by this one. So when did this one actually launched? Is it also a newly launched mic, or has this been out for a little while? Do you know?
I think it came out in November, December, so towards the end of last year.
Okay. Yeah, because then we talked about it on the stream, but then I never really saw reviews on it until your video now. So the GoXLR mic, you did a pretty in-depth review here of even comparison sounds, things like that. And I was really surprised by how good it sounded. Just considering it's the first mic, I think, from GoXLR. Obviously, they make the interface, but it's not like a Rode or something that has this long history of making mics. So given the comparison you had on there, I was pretty impressed by the sound you got out of this. And honestly, if I was looking for a new mic and I was just getting to streaming, I would probably consider this one, even maybe compared to the Beacon that came out today, because that the GoXLR sounded very full, I think, compared to the Beacon. It's not quite the same comparison, but yeah, I don't know. I was impressed, Pete. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of similar. I got sent them and I wanted to review them for a while, but the timing was never quite right. So when I actually did check them out, I was pleasantly surprised, really. For those of you that haven't watched the video yet. It's a $150 XLR microphone with a couple of nifty little features like an articulating joint, which makes it really easy to mount it to an arm and position it in whichever way and direction you wish to. But I did some comparisons to, let me try and remember which microphones I did. The Pod Mic, which is basically an absolute steal at $100. The Rode Pod Mic is probably the best value XLR microphone you're ever going to find. And then also the Shure MV7X, which is their MV7 but XLR only version, which I think is $180. So the Go XLR mic sort of fit directly in between that at $150. And I think people were just, you know, really happy with how it sounded straight out of the box when compared to the other ones, because it sounded the most balanced. Pod Mic is a great spoken word mic, but often lacks a bit of low end. And of course, you can fix all of these things in, you know, production. You can add an EQ to enhance different areas of the voice. There's no doubt that any of these microphones you could make sound good or awful, depending on how you set up your EQ. But just straight out of the box, I was really impressed with the sound of the Go XLR mic, and it's probably not getting the coverage that it deserves just because not much content has been created about it. So definitely check out this video if you haven't yet. I'm not just promoting all my videos to make sure that, you know, I get more money from YouTube. I do think it's a worthwhile watch, especially for those of you that are in the XLR ecosystem and wanting to stick with XLR audio and maybe looking for a microphone upgrade. I think it's a good option. Also, can we just appreciate this thumbnail? I think this thumbnail is one of my best, really. It took me so long to do this behind the pop filter O and M, so it looks like, you know, the text is actually there. But, you know, those are the kind of things that don't get appreciated, but take a long time as the creator.
I liked your Beacon thumbnail a lot. I think that was, you had like the really expressive face and everything. Yeah, I'm a sucker for the face thumbnails personally.
So, really good. So is the YouTube algorithm. That's why you have to do these stupid faces as YouTube. We've got a couple of questions we might as well pull out from chat. Elf Koopy asks, what would be a good budget mic? I mean, this kind of comes down to USB versus XLR, Ben. I don't know if you've got any ideas for them straight out the bat.
Yeah, I mean, again, like Pete said, it depends on if you want to go for XLR or USB, because now you can have a range of options within each of those, whereas it used to be USB was, it still is mostly USB is cheaper, and then XLR gets a little more expensive, but it's not quite the same, because with USB, you tend to get everything in one package, right? Like if you get the Elgato Wave or this one, the Beacon, then you really just need the mic and you're good to go, versus XLR mic, like if you want an SM7B or something lower end like the XLR, I'm forgetting the name of the mic. Go XLR mic. Yeah, or the Rode. You need to have something to plug it into and then plug that into your PC. So it depends on what your budget is, because that word means a lot to different people. I would say, like, do some research and look at, especially these new mics that just came out, because they're going to be kind of offering newer things than you've seen in the past. I know Elgato Wave is a very popular one. Both the 1 and 3, I think, are pretty popular, plus the Rode. If you prefer XLR, the Podcaster, I believe, is also pretty popular at a decent range too.
Yeah, a similar question has come through. What would you consider a good upgrade path from the Rode NT USB? I think you've mentioned a few there, like Wave 1 and Wave 3 microphones are just, from Elgato, are such good value just because of Wavelink software that you get with them. But if you're looking maybe not for a condenser microphone, but for a dynamic microphone, there's still plenty of good USB options. The XLR route, exactly as you've just said, Ben, does get more expensive just because you have to invest in an interface to actually, you know, connect it up to your computer. And then some microphones also require some kind of signal boost. So it does get more expensive, but then you also get a lot more control going the XLR route. But certainly the NT USB is one of my favorite, you know, cheap budget USB microphones. The biggest difference that a lot of people can make from these cheap microphones is to buy a boom arm and raise that microphone up closer to your mouth, because that makes such a big difference on any microphone, honestly. If you have it up close to your mouth, then you improve the signal to noise ratio. The signal, which is your mouth, gets much louder because it's right next to the microphone, and the noise, things like your keyboard or your computer, gets quieter because it's further away from those things. So if you don't already own a boom arm or a pop filter, these are really cheap things that you can get off Amazon to massively improve your stream audio. I feel like I'm plugging a lot of my videos, but there is a video that I've done of like how to make any microphone sound good, I think it's called. I'll try and find it whilst I'm talking.
I think there was one more question when you're looking for that I was kind of curious about too, and something I saw mentioned in a lot of the videos from the new Beacon stuff. How do you compare the Beacon software in terms of user friendliness to Elgato's Wavelink? Do you think it's kind of on the same level? Does it need some work? Where are you kind of at with that?
Yeah, so that was one of my main complaints towards the end of my video, basically, is that I think that the software still needs a lot of work in terms of UI and ease of use, which is understandable because it's like a new product. I guess the software could technically be classed as still in beta, but Wavelink and Elgato in general do such a good job of making their software intuitive for people to follow. And, you know, audio routing and submixes, these are like complex topics for a lot of creators that are buying their first expensive microphone, anything over $100. So Elgato have done a really good job of that. And I think Beacon still has quite a way. But the great thing about software is you can constantly improve it over time, and you don't need to buy new hardware to be able to improve it. So if they've got the hardware right, which I think they probably do with the microphone, then hopefully the software follows suit. But yeah, really good question. And also this is the video that I'm talking about, 5 steps to perfect stream audio. The very first step of that is all talking about microphone positioning and pop filters and speaking past the microphone, basically microphone technique. So that's a big investment that you can make for very, very little money that can improve the sound of any microphone that you guys have got already. Ben, I don't want to keep you for too long because we've almost hit the hour. We've had some great questions. I don't know if you've got anything else to say or if we should just wrap this up here. But we will be back next week with our normal schedule. I know we've been away for a couple of weeks. That's mostly my fault from taking a holiday in January when apparently everybody wants to release a product nowadays. It's usually a safe month to take a holiday as a content creator, but apparently everybody's releasing products in January now. So maybe I'll have to rethink that for next year. But yeah, Ben, I'll leave you to do the sign off for the episode and remind people that they can now review us on a second platform.
Yes, if you're on Spotify, which I think most audio listeners probably are, you can now leave a review. You can't write anything, so don't try to do that on Spotify. Do that on Twitter or iTunes, I guess. But you can leave a star review if you're on Spotify, so we'd appreciate that if you do listen on there. And yeah, as Pete said, we'll be back next week, hopefully on a more consistent schedule now in the new year. Hopefully we'll have more news coming out, tons of this of news this week with all the tech and everything, but I anticipate we'll have more DMCA to talk about this year, Pete. Hopefully more good updates from YouTube and Twitch, and hopefully some streamer gear too, maybe later in the year. We'll have to see.
Yeah, I'm not going to add anything to that. Perfect ending. Thanks for all the reviews, and thanks for everybody for joining. Sorry that I've been on poor form tonight, and Ben's completely carried the podcast. I need to get some sleep. I've basically not slept for the last 2 nights trying to get this video out. But no more complaints. We'll catch you guys next week for the next episode of the podcast. Peace.